God's Word. This comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, beginning in verse 6. Let's listen for the word of the Lord to us this morning. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always, and he will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Please be seated. Many of you, I imagine, are familiar with the name Bob Pierce. Bob Pierce was the founder of World Vision and instrumental in the development of Samaritan's Purse, two organizations that have set the standard for caring for the poor in our world. Pierce was both a passionate and a far from perfect man, and he somewhat tragically fulfilled his youthful boast that God's workers should burn out, not rust out. But after returning from what was an inaugural trip to China in the years after World War II, where he encountered hunger and need on an overwhelming scale, Pierce wrote in the flyleaf of his Bible some words that have become rather famous and really inspirational to many people. Pierce wrote this. He said, "Let my heart be broken with the things that break the heart of God." Again, he prayed, "Let my heart be broken with the things that break the heart of God." If you made that your fervent prayer too, how might your life change? And how might you end up changing the world? Well, we are looking this spring at how we can grow our hearts through giving. We saw a few weeks ago as we began that God is exceedingly generous with us. That throughout the scriptures we see God providing material goods and resources for people, even giving wealth and great abundance to some. Some things God has given us out of necessity, and we need them. Some things God has given to us for our sheer delight so that we can simply enjoy them. But all things are given to us by a God who is generous from the heart. But we also know that not everyone in our world gets to enjoy the good things with which God has filled our world. Poverty is real. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 19.4 million people reported living in deep poverty in 2015, which means that this was a household income below 50% of the poverty level, so deep poverty. For a single individual under 65, that deep poverty would be an income annually of about $6,200. For a family of four with two children, that would be about $1,200 a year. These individuals represent 6.1% of Americans. And without wanting to diminish the challenges that they face, the fact is that nearly all of them are better off than many impoverished people around the world. According to World Vision, in East Africa alone, as we sit here today, so this is going to be South Sudan, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Somalia, 25 million people are in need of food assistance. More than 3.5 million children in that region are suffering from severe malnutrition. 100,000 people in South Sudan are facing starvation. The UN has said that this is the largest humanitarian crisis since 1945. Right now. If we can get it to work, let me show you a video from World Vision that describes this a little bit more.
Famine declared since 2011, where here in Somalia, over a quarter of a million people perished in that famine. But this is a crisis that's not only happening here in Somalia, it's also happening in South Sudan, where famine has already been declared. People are starting to get very, very sick, and their already weakened bodies are just unable to cope. This is really a tragic situation to understand as we speak with nomadic people who have lost every one of their livestock, have dropped and died from exhaustion, one by one by one. Family members are on the brink of starvation. World Vision is on the ground here providing high energy biscuits, providing water. We're also trying to ensure that they have the medical care that they need and the shelter needs taken care of. But it is a desperate situation and we need your help.
People created in the very image and likeness of God are facing deep crisis of poverty, life-threatening. And while we may be blissfully ignorant of their plight, not seeing their need, and if we are brutally honest with ourselves, not really caring that much, the same cannot be said of God. These are things that break the heart of God. God is not unaware. God is not uncaring. God sees the needs of the hungry and the oppressed. God hears the cry of the widow and the orphan. In Psalm 10, we hear these words, this cry that says, Lord, you listen to the desires of those who suffer. You steady their hearts. You listen closely to them to establish justice for the orphan and the oppressed. And yet, suffering and poverty and hunger and famine and injustice persist. Some of you might be familiar with the comic strip Pontius's Puddle. In one strip, a character declares, sometimes I'd like to ask God why he allows poverty, famine, and injustice when he could do something about it. What's stopping you? His friend replies. I'm afraid God might ask me the same question. God does ask us that same question. What is stopping you from doing something about poverty and famine and injustice in our world? Perhaps we need to have our hearts broken with things that break the heart of God. Perhaps we need to grow our hearts to become more compassionate, more like the generous heart of God. And we can do that by strategically and intentionally and generously giving what God has given toward us to both the social and individual needs around us. And I think our scripture in Isaiah is helpful here. First, a compassionate giving grows our relationship with God. When we are faithfully giving our resources toward making a more just society, when we give generously toward meeting the needs of people who are suffering and going without, that changes the way that we relate to God and the way God relates to us. Now, for those ancient Israelites that Isaiah is speaking to, it was not enough for them to simply go through the motions of worship to do the equivalent of showing up on a Sunday morning, but actually they were doing much more with their fasting and their praying, with acting humble and before God, but yet God was not responding the way these Israelites wanted. And so when they would call upon the Lord, when they would seek after God, they would end up feeling like God wasn't paying attention, like he just didn't notice them. But God did notice. God noticed not only their shallow worship and religious devotions, but God also noticed how they financially exploited workers, and they failed to stand up for the poor. So God says to them, you must also follow my commands and worship me by caring for the hungry and those in need. And so we see in our text in verse 9, through the prophet we hear, then you will call, and the Lord will answer. Then you will, when you cry for help, he will say, here am I. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, does that sound like American politics? If you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. All of us want to be able to cry out to the Lord for help and to have God say, here I am. We want to hear from God, don't we? We want God to be able to come to our aid. We long for God to help us with whatever it is that we're working on in life. But here I find the words of Dallas Willard to be rather convicting, as he challenges us to remember that hearing God is for those who are devoted to the glory of God and the advancement of his kingdom. And so he writes, are we ready to be in business with God? If you find yourself in a position where you can honestly say, God has never spoken to me, then you well might ask, why should God speak to me? What am I doing in life that would make speaking to me the reasonable thing for him to do? Are we in business together in life? Or am I in business just for myself, trying to use a little God to advance my projects? Are we in business with God? Clearly, as we see in the life and the ministry of Jesus, God is in the business of fighting injustice and feeding the hungry and serving the poor. Proverbs 21:13 tells us, whoever shuts their ears to the cry of the poor will also cry out and not be answered. It is worth asking, how many Christians today are not having their prayers answered because they pay no attention to helping the neediest in our world? Now, we can't turn this into a formula, obviously. God is sovereign and makes no quid pro quo arrangement with us where he will automatically be forced to answer our prayers if we just give a little money. But it is worth wrestling with some hard questions. If my heart is not broken with the things that break the heart of God, well, how deeply then can my heart be connected to God's heart? Compassionate giving to those in need in our world grows our hearts for sure. And it may actually even grow our resources. Consider this. Proverbs 11 says that one person gives freely yet gains more. Another withholds unduly but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. As God sees that he can trust us to be generous with what he gives us, and as we become conduits of blessing to others, including financial blessings, God often, but not always, will give to us even more economic prosperity. But, and this is a big but, even then, the purpose of God giving us more is not some sort of repayment or reward for a job well done. And, oh, you did so good giving that away. Here, let me bless you so you can enjoy a whole lot more. The purpose of giving us more is to enable us to continue that ministry of generous giving to those with greater needs. The economy of God is not based on self-interest and on gaining for ourselves. The economy of God is based on generous love and giving to others as they have need. In the economy of God's kingdom, we actually work and make more money, not just to provide for ourselves, but so that we can give to those who cannot work and who have less money. I mean, how totally countercultural is this? Not everyone has the opportunity to work and to make a profit for themselves, or some others can work but still not make enough to provide for themselves. So in our interconnected world, and especially in the communal life of the body of Christ, the church, a fundamental reason for working and for making a profit is so that those with extra can give to those who have too little. Our compassionate giving grows our hearts and may even grow our resources, but our compassionate giving must always be motivated by love. In that great passage in 1 Corinthians 13, where the Apostle Paul writes about love, right before he gets to that verse that all bridal couples like to put into their wedding, he says this. He says, if I give all I possess to the poor, and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Nada, zip, zilch, bagel, nothing comes back. We cannot then give from some sort of position of superiority. There is no place for patronizing or looking down upon those to whom we give as though we are somehow smarter simply because we are richer. We are not worth more than those to whom we generously give just because we have a greater net worth. John Calvin put it this way: let this therefore be our rule for generosity and beneficence. We are the stewards of everything God has conferred on us, by which we are able to help our neighbor and are required to render account of our stewardship. Moreover, the only right stewardship is that which is tested by the rule of love. Now, that word steward is not one that we use a whole lot. One context that it shows up that came to my mind as I was thinking about this was in the restaurant industry, particularly the higher end. A few weeks back, my wife and I were graciously given the opportunity to go out to dinner with another couple who took us out to go to the Metropolitan Grill. Oh, I love me a good steak. I think there will be steak in heaven. I'm not sure, but I can't quote you chapter and verse, but I think it wouldn't be heaven without steak. But we were there, and as part of that elaborate service in this upscale, incredible restaurant, comes a guy who is a steward. He's the wine steward, who comes and wants to tell you about the thousands of bottles of wine that they have available. He is the curator. He and actually two other gentlemen are the sommeliers, and it is their job to basically fall in love with the wine, to receive this gracious gift that the restaurant has, and then to help you find the right one and to share that with you. He manages it. He knows them. They don't belong to him, but he has been given the responsibility of stewarding well this resource that he can then share with others. Now, the analogy isn't perfect. I know it breaks down. But I wonder, what would happen if I began to look at the things that have been given to me? My IRA and my savings account and my car and my house and all of that. I thought about it not just through the lens of this is for me to hold on to and for me to enjoy, to drink it all in, but to share with others as well. How do we do this? Well, Isaiah points to two ways that we should give compassionately from the heart. We give to address social needs and to meet individual needs. Let's go back to our text, Isaiah 58. This is verse 6. First, we give to fight injustice. He asks the question, is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice. In addition to alleviating the symptoms of poverty, we must also work tirelessly to address the sources of poverty. This could be a regressive tax system and lack of affordable housing in our own society. It could be corrupt governments and their handling of resources and extorting their citizens in other societies. But we need to remember always that evil can be and in fact is systemic. There are not only sins of individuals, but sins of societies which hold people in bondage. And God wants you and me to give generously to the work of abolishing wrongs in social structures, to fight injustice. And then second, we give to counter inhumanity. Through Isaiah, we hear these words, to not only loose the chains of injustice, but also untie the cords of the yoke. What is a yoke? Y'all know? A yoke is that instrument that you put on an animal, or sometimes two, to attach them, like a harness that attaches them to a plow or a cart or something that they have to pull. Do yokes belong on people? Yokes are used to control animals, not people. So we need to eliminate every way in which people are treated inhumanely, like animals, everywhere that a person is treated like a commodity and used and exploited. It is abhorrent that slavery still exists in our world today. It is evil that prostitution can be found in every society. It is horrific that you and I live right in the middle of one of the largest sex trafficking corridors in the nation, running between Vancouver, BC, and Portland, up and down I-5. We are called to financially support ministries that restore people's dignity and untie the cords of the yoke. And third, we give to address inequality. In addition to loosing the chains of injustice and untying the cords of the yoke, we're to set the oppressed free and to break every yoke. The oppressed, what that word means, is those are people who are beaten and bruised, those who are harassed and crushed, those who are put down and held down, those who are broken by life and broken by society. Systemic racism shuts down people of color and keeps them from advancing and pursuing their dreams. Discriminatory practices shut out legal immigrants and keep them from access to equal opportunities for work and education. Sexism and sexual harassment in the workplace keeps many women shut up, and they must live with a fear of reprisal should they speak out and complain. As God's people, we must work and financially give for their freedom and the breaking of systems that might drag people back into oppression. If you are not sure where to begin giving generously to break the yoke of injustice and of inhumanity and of inequality, if you feel overwhelmed by this and don't know where to start, one resource I would call your attention to is something called Servant Match. It's provided by the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. If you get onto their website, it allows you to quickly and easily find giving opportunities based on different focuses in ministry, different regions of the world. Whatever it is that you are passionate about, I'm pretty confident there is already a ministry, a solid, reputable ministry of Christ Church that is working on that, that you could give to. And yet, even as we grow, compassionate hearts, by giving to address social needs, we must also give to meet individual needs as well. And so we continue in Isaiah's prophecy, where we hear that we are to give food for the hungry. Verse 7, is it not what God desires to share your food with the hungry? Verse 7 says, according to the Washington State Department of Health, about 14% of our state's residents are food insecure. That's defined as having limited or uncertain availability to nutritional or adequate or safe food. 14% of our neighbors. In the Shoreline School District, some of you who work there know this well. In the Shoreline School District, over 26% of students are in a free or reduced-priced meal program. 1 in 4. That is why, friends, we have a deacon's pantry. It's part of the ministry of Calvin Church. It's why we celebrate and continue to support the Backpack Kids ministry that gives food to students on these programs to take home and have over the weekend. It's why we give financially to that end. We have to give food for the hungry. Second, shelter for the homeless. The prophecy continues not only to share your food with the hungry, but to provide the poor wanderer with shelter. I think we all know that homelessness has reached a crisis or epidemic proportions in Seattle and King County. It is estimated that somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 people are sleeping on our streets each night. That doesn't count the people who found a bed with a Union Gospel Mission. That's people on the streets. And that's why we corporately as a church, and many of us individually, financially support the work of ministries like Vision House, and we're exploring a partnership with Ronald Commons up the street. And finally, we are called to provide clothes for those who are exposed. Verse 7, when you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood, the prophet says. This includes everything from providing basic clothing that is clean and comfortable and provides a level of dignity, to organizations that provide women who are escaping homelessness with nicer clothes to go to an interview in as they seek to get established and get that job and to move out of homelessness. Look, our hearts grow to be more like God's generous heart when we give generously to meet the needs of the hungry and the homeless who are right in our own neighborhood. Throughout this series on generosity, I've been trying to make this as concrete as I could Let me try to do that this morning as we wrap up in the few minutes we have left. But first, I want to make sure we say this. Sometimes the problem isn't out there. If this morning you are sitting here and you're feeling really uncomfortable because you know that yourself, you are in a place of great need, we as a church need to be a safe place. Sometimes we're afraid to share. We're embarrassed about the fact that we cannot meet a bill, we can't make our rent payment, whatever it might be. I want you to know that this is a safe place for you if you are struggling. And that is what our deacons are here for. And they would love to have a conversation with you. If you do not know who your deacon is, and if you are a regular member or attender here, you do have one assigned to you. If you don't know who your deacon is, talk with Matt Carpenter, our Minister of Congregational Care. And your conversation will be held as confidentially as possible and appropriate. But we want to meet your needs as best we can. How do we apply this? For all of us, though, we've got to start with prayer. We need to pray that God would help us to see those that we often overlook, whether on our streets or across the globe, to be able to see them as God sees them, to see them not as projects, but as people, to be loved and served and shown dignity. And maybe you even want to pray boldly, as Bob Pierce did, that God would break your heart with the things that break the heart of God. Pray that God would grow your heart through giving. And then give. Give to those who serve the poor with compassion. That certainly includes sharing with the people who are sitting next to you, because part of our responsibility and our commitment to each other and to God as members of this body, as Calvin Church, is to give regularly to the ministries of this body. But you may also feel called by God to give elsewhere, to different organizations. And if you do, there are just good, healthy, wise questions to ask. Does this ministry or organization have a record of responsibility? How much of their funding goes to overhead and how much to the actual ministry? How responsible are they with having a board of directors who monitors things? Have they had an annual audit? Do they reveal what their finances are? Are they part of an organization like the one I mentioned, the Evangelical Council of Financial Accountability? Be wise in your stewardship of the resources God has given you, but give to those who serve the poor. And you may also want to give directly yourself to someone in need. As you pray and ask God to help you see those around you who are struggling, know that God likes to answer that prayer. And so you may have somebody, even today, come across your path. And you may feel called to give directly to somebody in need. But again, there are questions to ask. Will my giving be more helpful or harmful? What's the right amount for this person to receive? Does this person have an overall budget that they're working from? Is this going to be a one-time gift, or will my giving to them be regular? What other sources of income does the person have, or should they have? And can I give, this is important, can I give to this person without controlling? Now, all of this can be really hard. We all know that some people make chronically poor choices that keep them enmeshed in cycles of desperate need, no matter how much others try to help them. As followers of Christ, though, we must often make then difficult decisions about how and how not to aid someone who is impoverished or just struggling financially. But because there is nothing inherently good about poverty, and because we are called to be generous in heart as God is with us, we must keep struggling with these questions. Let me finish with this. I want to give you a challenge. I want to give you an experiment to try. Here's what I want to challenge you to do. I want you to set aside some money. Maybe you want to talk, for those of you who are married, or if you have children in your home, you may want to do this as a household thing. But I want you to set aside some money. You get to pick the amount. It could be $10. It could be $100. Be $1,000, depending on your own socioeconomic status, but make it significant to you. And then I want you to pray. And you can even just hold on to that money, the cash in an envelope, and I want you to pray, Lord, would you lead me to somebody who needs this? Pray it fervently, pray it honestly, pray it often if you need to, and then watch what happens. because I believe that God will lead you to somebody. It might even be this afternoon. It might be next week. It might take some time. But keep praying that prayer over that money and see what God does. And when you come across that person, give it generously, give it anonymously, and give it with all the love that you've got in your heart for that person. And without making it into a formula, I want you to experiment here with this basic principle about how the more you give, the more blessed the other will be, and the more blessed you will be. And watch your heart grow. Can you think of somebody even now that you could give to?